The Economic Development and Housing Budget Division for Wednesday, April 15th, will come to order. Let's see, who's here? Senator Anderson, are you around? Senator Anderson, welcome to the committee. Can everybody hear me out there? Is this thing playing okay?
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Yeah, they're on.
Are they on? Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1919.
Senator Anderson, please pull that microphone closer to you.
Sure, you bet. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1919 is a bill to create a program called the Minnesota Green Enterprise Assistance. And this started out as something, this is a recommendation of the Green Jobs Task Force, and it started out as a Green Enterprise Authority. This is a somewhat scaled back version of the bill as introduced, and what it does is establish a position indeed, which is why we're here in front of your division, which would focus on a multi-agency project to, as it says on 1.8, to advise, promote, market, coordinate, and mandate state agency action on green enterprise and green economy projects. So the idea is to have one entity that is the go-to place for green business development in the state of Minnesota, and this would be located in Deed, but it would be the position in Deed would be in a collaborative, part of their job would be to collaborate with all the other state agencies that are listed that have some overlap over these green business areas. So this in part would be a marketing and promotion role. And one of the things we've talked about over the last couple of years as we created the Green Jobs Task Force and toured the state to talk about how we could increase our advantage or our edge in green businesses in Minnesota is to realize that some other states have really beat us to the punch in their marketing and promotion of their states as a place to open and do green businesses. Yet we have incredible strengths in this area, and we really should be leading the nation. We've led the nation in our policies that promote renewable energy, biofuels, clean water protection, and energy efficiency. But we've been a little short on our success in translating those policies into jobs and economic growth. And so this is all about trying to enhance that strategy by taking our strengths in the policy areas and turning them into jobs and economic activity. So we want a person indeed to be responsible in conjunction with other agency staff for promoting Minnesota as a place to do green business, but also for creating the function of making a one-stop shop. And the other thing we heard, besides the fact that we really need to hone in on the promotion of our state and the jobs potential, but we also heard from entrepreneurs and business people around the state in our Green Jobs Task Force hearings that there's so many barriers to getting through bureaucracies. And this is true probably in every area of state government, and every kind of business has experienced this. But we heard this especially in the area of green jobs, that they need one place to call to find out what types of government assistance is available, what types of permits are required, what the roadblocks are, and how we can help them. And so the idea is to have one place to do that, but to do it through the transportation agency, the PCA, the DNR, energy, ag, indeed, working closely together in a multi-agency way. So instead of creating a sort of separate outside of a state agency new entity, which was a little hard to do given our budget constraints right now, we've located this sort of coordinating and marketing and promotion role indeed. And we are proposing to fund this with money that's left from the Green Jobs Task Force appropriation. So we would be putting that money in our budget in and because that's coming from a commerce fund in the energy side of commerce. So, Mr. Chair, that's really the bill, and I'd be happy to take questions or
So, Senator, Senator Kubley, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Anderson, you mentioned that the title had changed to the Green Enterprise Assistance, but it seems that it still says authority on line 2.1 on section 2. You want to change that to assistance so that it's consistent or not?
Which, I'm sorry, I'm looking
Senator
for
Anderson.
The...
Two,
oh, line 2.1.
That's a very good point. And so, yeah, I think it should be changed to assistance.
Well, I'd make that a verbal amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was not paying attention. What is it?
On section 2 on line 2.1, just change the word authority to assistance so it's consistent with the change in the title.
Is it 2.5?
It's listed on the front of the sheet.
2.1.
So it's line 2.1.
Okay, so Senator Kubley moves on line 2.1 to delete authority and insert assistance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion adopted. Okay. Senator Anderson, we had a small discussion in Senator Metzen's committee about adding some legislators to this. Are you going to do that in your committee?
I brought it up in my committee and talked about the discussion we had, but I hadn't really proposed language in the bill. I'm open to the idea. Or we could just ask the agencies to do it. But, I didn't have any particular language in mind, but I'm open to that.
Well, I thought since it's coming to my committee and your committee, we should both be on it. at least, and maybe Senator Metzen. I don't know. I know we've designated chairs of committees in the past to be on some of these task forces, and I just thought it might be an idea since you are doing a very nice job of getting agencies to communicate with each other here on this, which we have had problems with in the past, I know. And so they will have to communicate here. And, you know, you might want to be around and I might want to be around to make sure they're communicating well. And I'm not going to make any motions right here because I don't have any language, but we're going to send this back to your committee.
Yes.
Okay. And I think between you and I, we can talk about what would be the appropriate way to do that if it's okay with you.
And you're talking about having participation or sort of some oversight over this collaboration role?
Well,
or about legislators going to trade shows? That's
well,
what Senator
Bonoff... Did we change this a little bit from the last time I saw it? I mean, when it was
I
in Senator
so.
Metzen's committee?
No, we haven't. So I'm just trying to remember exactly... hone in on exactly what you're...
You remember Senator Bonoff had the same concerns in Senator Metzen's committee? It seems to me it was a longer bill, was it?
Well, the original bill was longer, but this was my delete all amendment.
Okay, all right. And so have we changed it from people make meeting to discuss this to just collaboration between agencies? Is that what we kind of changed it to?
Yes. Well, we said that, you know, each of these agencies that I mentioned do have to designate someone in their agency to be part of this collaborative effort. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we can work on that.
Senator Saxon.
You want a motion, Mr. Chair?
Wait, I just want to make sure that we understand what we're talking about. And I don't know that we do, so maybe I'll talk to you after we move it out of here and it goes to your committee. Senator Metzen.
Well, I applaud Senator Anderson. I mean, it's too bad you have to put into law that state agencies should cooperate and get along and talk to one another and work back and forth on these economic development issues. But I guess it has to be, so you're doing it, and I think that's fine, because this is certainly an economic development tool that we should be doing as a state. Other states are doing this kind of stuff. But I think we're falling a little bit behind, so I thank you for doing this.
Okay, so I think the right amendment would be for Senator Saxon to move that Senate File 1919 recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance, and then you pick it up from there. It doesn't have to go through Finance, but that's the motion to get it out of here and get it back to you.
Okay.
I think Senator Cohen can then just refer it to your committee. Do you have a?
Yeah.
Is that?
That works.
Okay. All right.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Oh, as amended. Sorry. So Senator Saxon makes that motion as amended. Any further discussion? Senator Anderson, any further comments?
No, thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right, then. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Members. Appreciate it.
Is Senator Torres Ray here?
We have. Let's forget that.
September nearby. That'll be easier to look at than this.
Mr. Chair, I was asked to move her bill. I'm not sure if she was coming, but...
I hope she's coming.
Well, no, she is.
Are you one of the
this
authors?
Was heard in, this was heard, yeah, I was, this was heard in the Transportation Committee as well, and it's economic development for businesses that were hurt during construction of some of the 62 crosstown construction and also Lake Street. Just an idea that we can help some businesses survive construction.
Mr. Chair?
She's here.
She's here. She made
okay.
it. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Senator Cook?
Well, no, I just, now that Senator Torres Reyes is here, I'm just wondering, there's an empty spot on the appropriation, so I was wondering if that...
We're going to figure that out.
All right.
Okay. Senator Torres Reyes, welcome to the committee. Go ahead and explain Senate File 1513.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee. Senate File 1513 is... construction mitigation program that I am trying to pursue and with your support we will put in place this year. Members, this project came as a result of significant work that we've done with the Department of Transportation and business owners who have been impacted by road construction. And many of you have heard the testimony of some of the business owners that were impacted in my district. Unfortunately, we were told that today you don't have a lot of time to hear the testimony, so I brought only one testifier who will speak on behalf of many businesses that he has worked with for many, many years. And I am going to let Eric Nicholson to talk about the idea behind this project, and I will be here ready to respond to questions that you might have related to this bill, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Go ahead, introduce yourself for the record, please. Mr. Nathanson, can you pull the microphone a little bit closer?
My name is Eric Nathanson. I'm the Financial Resources Coordinator for the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, MCCD, and I will be very brief because I know you've got a lot of work to do. We're a nonprofit organization that provides technical assistance and access to capital for businesses throughout the metro area. And for the last few years, we've worked very closely with businesses in Minneapolis that have been impacted by transportation projects, road construction projects on Lake Street and Lowry Avenue. And a couple of quick things that we found out. The transportation agencies do a good job of informing building owners about upcoming transportation projects that might affect them. But our particular niche are small tenant businesses, and they are the ones that tend to fall between the cracks when these construction projects occur, and they don't have good information about what will be affecting them, and they don't have mitigation resources available to them. So assisting the very smallest tenant businesses is crucial if they're going to survive some of these road projects. They need... marketing assistance, they need planning assistance to prepare for the road projects, they need advance notice of these projects, and we found that in many cases this information is just not available to them. Senator Torres Reyes' bill will enable some small pilot projects to proceed, which will demonstrate new techniques for assisting businesses that can't be done under the existing MnDOT program. So we think that it's an important step forward. We know that you're facing severe budget pressures, and we think that a pilot project to show how businesses can survive transportation construction projects would be very helpful.
Senator Torres Reyes, we have what's the amendment? Do you have something? Okay. Can we pass out? First of all, let's pass out. We have an amendment that I think you might fix this up so we can try and make it work. We've been talking about this quite a bit to try and we don't exactly know the best way to go. So I've had some discussions with Senator Torres Reyes about doing some pilot projects. I believe we'll do five pilot projects around the state and see if this can be worked out so that we can get some advice to the communities that might be impacted by these transportation projects. You're going to receive the A8 amendment, and we have to insert the pilot project language, right? So,
yes.
Carolyn?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members, I would recommend that perhaps on line 1.4 we uncodify this language. And on line 1.4, say, call it a construction mitigation pilot program. And then after line 1.30, insert a new subdivision and call it an expiration date. Expiration. And I would recommend, I guess, this program could go for 1 year. So I would say this section expires on July 1, 2010.
Okay, but how about some pilot project language we have?
And then on page 3, line 3.5, it would read after development 2, after employment and economic development 2, develop a construction mitigation and delete. On line 3.6, delete grant and insert pilot program. And then before the period, insert to fund up to 5 projects.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me, but I need a copy of that amendment. I can't follow.
Casey, get a copy of it. To the author here.
Mr. Chair, these are all oral amendments, actually, but I can certainly repeat that language.
And okay, do you have a copy now?
Thank you.
Senator,
yes, Mr. Chairman, I do.
Okay, go ahead and repeat what you're thinking here.
Okay. Particularly on subdivision 2.
Well, start from the beginning because the chief author just got the delete all amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think if this is just going to be a pilot program, Mr. Chair, that we should not codify the first section. I would take this statute reference out and call this the construction mitigation pilot program on line 1.4. And then down after line 1.3, I would insert a new subdivision I'm sorry. Let's do it after line 2.4, a new subdivision 6. And I'll call it expiration and say this section expires on July 1, 2010.
Let's see.
Unless, I mean, we can certainly.
Let's do. I think we should 2011? I think we should go longer, yeah. I think we should go January 2nd of 2011.
Okay.
January. Is that okay, Senator Torres-Ray?
Mr. Chairman, part of the concerns with the expiration date will be that what we intend to do here with a pilot project will be to really document the process of supporting small businesses and figuring out what is that we need to do for the future and what has been, how is that we can support efforts to prepare small businesses for road construction time. So if we have an expiration date to bring that to the committee and then proceed with future recommendations may be complicated. So maybe we need to extend the time a little bit so that we can bring recommendations to this committee next year and then figure out what we need to do, whether or not we need to expand this program or not.
There is a report.
So my sense, Mr. Chairman, is that we probably need a little bit more time. A year may not be sufficient.
Is January 2nd, 2011 enough? Or?
I suspect that will be better, Mr. Chairman.
Pick a date.
Extending it for the biennium would be better.
Pick a date, Senator.
I think that'll June work. 2011 will be good.
June?
That gives us the next session.
June 2000? July 1st of 2011. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That will give us time to bring the report and then have hearings on it and figure out what do we do for the next biennium.
All right. And then to fund up the five projects, I think we want it to be statewide, okay?
Where's that?
That's on line 3.6.
There is a report in there. Mr. Chair, do you want me to read that back?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so it would read, starting on line 3.5, the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development to develop a construction mitigation pilot program to fund up to five projects statewide. And, Mr. Chair, projects is defined in these sections, so it is a defined term.
Okay. All right. So, are there any other questions or comments? Is Senator Torres-Ray, does that work for you? Does that work for you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any questions or comments of the chief author? Okay. Seeing none, then, Senator, first of all, let's move the amendments.
Mr. Chair, I believe that this amendment is drafted as an amendment to our omnibus.
Yeah.
So it probably is better that we just lay this amendment on the table for now until we bring up our omnibus amendment. And then at a later point, we can amend that into that document. Well, you were going to move something.
We got to move the amendments. We haven't amended it yet.
Gotcha.
Senator Kelash moves to amend Senate file, well, SCS 1198A-8. Moves to amend it as council just suggested we amend it. Okay.
Thank you.
Any discussions or questions or comments on what the amendment is? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I oppose the motion to adopt it. Okay, then, Senator Torres, what we'll do is we'll lay this over. We're going to be bringing up this is a delete everything amendment to your amendment that will then fit into the economic development omnibus bill. And so we'll lay this over, and then we'll move it into the bill when we bring up the bill. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Well, then you don't deserve anything. Yeah. I put it on your board. That's okay.
So, go ahead, Cap. You can announce that.
Mr. Chair, members, for audience members, copies of the omnibus amendment, the spreadsheet, and a summary prepared by counsel are outside in the hall on our committee carts.
Good idea. Nice haircut.
Stand in line.
So I don't know if there's going to be a mass exodus here or not, but we're about to bring up the Omnibus Economic Development Budget Division bill. I think all of the members have seen the spreadsheet, and at least we've given you all the spreadsheet on the computer. Whether or not you looked at it, I don't know. And then the second thing that we've done is we got everybody the language this afternoon that's on the committee. If anybody in the audience wants to see the language, it's out on the cart. So I will let you guys take off if you all want to go out and get a copy of the bill right now, or otherwise we'll and wait for you to come back in. And we're ordering more copies. Does everybody at the committee have a copy? Okay. All right. Everybody in the committee has a copy. I will just tell you that even though it says Senate File 1198, it'll be a little bit different. That'll be introduced as a committee bill, and it'll be introduced on the Senate floor, and then it'll be referred to Finance after we pass it out of here. We were instructed to cut about $23 million, and we've accomplished that in the bill. The agency's administrative budgets are generally reduced, and they're supporting the bill for economic and job growth purposes. Some of the examples that we got are small business growth, Biobusiness Alliance, employment for some disabled people, Office of Science and Technology, and jobs production. We also got some federal stimulus money that was available to offset some of the expenses in the Workforce Development Fund, and there's a national emergency grant for workers in the auto industry. There's a Trade Adjustment Act, which should help employees whose jobs have been outsourced, like Hutchinson Technology. And like I mentioned earlier, the draft spreadsheet was distributed last Thursday. So today we'll go through it, if you want, line by line. If not, we'll have Mr. Jensen do a general summary of the spreadsheet, and then if there's any questions, we can have questions. We will go through the bill itself, and then if anybody has amendments, we can entertain any kind of amendments. So, Mr. Jensen, where do you want to start?
Mr. Chairman, members, you should have a spreadsheet that's dated 4/15/09.
It looks like this.
And I'll just kind of go through and show you how it's formatted. You can see the first columns are the budget, the fund base. We worked off the February forecast, and the governor's column, the adjustments were made from the February forecast. And then the next set of columns for the Senate also were adjustments to the February forecast. So you can see, like on line 10, there was no money for the Biobusiness Alliance in the base. The governor was recommending $200,000. The Senate wanted to support that program at a higher level. So there's $500,000 each year. And go across to the other columns, you can see the Senate appropriation, which will be in the bill at $1 million. And it's also added to the base for $1 million. That's kind of how the spreadsheet is set up, and we followed that all the way through for all the agencies. Another little example is on line 19, the Office of Science and Technology. There's no base there, and the governor did not recommend any money. The division recommended $375,000 each year, and that amount is carried over into the base years also. Line 26 was a new bill on mitigation of construction impacts. We just heard that from Senator Torres-Ray, adding $100,000 for a one-time money. As you go across the page on line 26, you'll see that in fiscal year 12 and 13, there's no money there. We did not add that to the base. And that's similar for line 28, the Hugo Tornado Relief. That's a one-time appropriation of $350,000. Going down into Workforce Development Program, line 45, as Senator Tomasoni mentioned, we added some money for disabled workers. Line 47 is a similar provision. Most of these are base items, and you'll see them when we just quickly review the budget bill. On page 2, line 54, the Boys and Girls Clubs, the Job Skills Program, the base was $2 million. The governor had cut that to zero. The Senate didn't accept that recommendation, so you can see we restored the money at $2 million for the biennial. We also added, you can see many adjustments, but they're fairly small. We have some stimulus money was used on line 64. The governor was recommending some universal job seeker support. I'm going to use federal stimulus money to pay for that effort. Well, in lines 75 through 78 are the administrative part of DEED, and we just accepted the governor's recommendation to reduce those budgets.
Mr. Jensen, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cole.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen, can you just go back with the universal job seekers? You're saying the governor's got it in his rec for 2011 at 1.5. The Senate version has got zero recommended, but you said that that's being funded out of the stimulus and that those numbers are not indicated on this spreadsheet? Or where do we, how do we, how are those numbers recorded? Or
Mr. Chairman, members, some of the stimulus money goes into the federal funds within the department. We do not appropriate those, so they do not show on this spreadsheet. But we know they're there because the department submitted an LAC request for that purpose of about $9 million.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, under on page 3, the Public Facilities Authority, we're seeing the first appropriations of the constitutional amendment for the legacy program, the clean water accounts. Under Explore Minnesota Tourism, there's an increase there for the jobs production fund. Operates within the film board. Yeah, that's a dedication money.
That is dedicated money.
Sales tax. The clean water. Mr. Chairman, on housing finance, we basically took the governor's recommendation. We have a small reduction, and then on line page 4, line 148, there's a small demo project there for high-risk adults. Basically, are coming out of the prison and trying to provide support for them. But if you notice, the governor's rec is $85,420,000, and the Senate base there is $85,420,000. So we're basically at the governor's level. For commerce, we basically again took the governor's recommendations. There's some increased spending, but we also have some savings by doing the product review and registration within the department and hiring staff and not contracting out for it. So we gained a few dollars on that process. Mr. Chairman, the rest of the page is basically base items, general fund money. And on page 6, labor and industry, line 233, there was a small change in the reduction, but we're reducing that. And we also accepted on line 235 an increase in the apprenticeship program to be paid from the Workforce Development Fund. Mediation Services Board, we just took the governor's recommendation, same for Workers' Comp, Court of Appeals. Historical Society on page 7, line 268. The numbers are different than the governor's. We reduced their budgets by the amount of the lease cost for the Historical Society building and for the debt service on the building. Then applied a 7% reduction. So that's why the numbers are different. Page 7 near the bottom, public broadcasting, and on to page 8. There's two increases there on line 306 and 307. One is for equipment grants. So the 190 right above that would be 250 for equipment grants and a one-time appropriation for the digital conversion. Arts Board, they have a 10% reduction. It's only applied to the grants program and the Regional Arts Council. That's on line 325 and 330. Mr. Chairman, that's the, on line page 9, line 347, Humanities Commission. The Senate is restoring that at $250,000 a year. On page 9, line 367 is the revenues that were raising, excuse me. Part of that is a transfer that's including some of the stimulus money that provides relief to the dislocated worker program. page 10, there's a couple of items there, the non-general fund revenue, and that's basically the governor's suggestion. So you can see on line 390, $14,000 over the target, or $7,000 a year over the target.
So, okay, thank you, Ms. Jensen. Does anybody have any questions on the spreadsheet, or do we want me to proceed to the bill? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think you have the bill. It's dated 4/15. First page is just a general summary. We're spending $415 million for the biennium. Starts with the Department of Economic Development, and they're spending funds. And then page 2, the business and community development. The chairman mentioned some of the increases that you'll see in here. I'm not going to read each paragraph. Page 2, line 34, new appropriation. It goes on to page 3 for a loan to an aircraft company, an assembly company. The starting and completion center at Minneapolis St. Paul. This will be a loan. And it should create at least 500 jobs over a five-year period in Minnesota. That's on line 318. Line 327, the governor had actually deleted all the money for the Minnesota Investors Congress, but that's restored. Page 4, line 8, Rural Policy Center at St. Peter. The governor had reduced that to zero. The center is putting that back. Line 18 was one of the new bills that was added to the bill. Page 5 is the workforce development program. These are basically monies that go into the department for matching the federal dollars. Mr. Chairman, on line 5.27, we're restoring the base for Twin City Rise. Page 6, line 5 is a program for Ramsey County for development of Building Lives program. On page 7, line 10, that was an appropriation that was in the 07 bill, and it's now going to be continued in the base for developing of that program to help disabled people. Chairman, on page 8, we're restoring many of the summer youth employment programs, and I think we mentioned the Boys and Girls Club. And that continues on to page 9, kind of down through line 22. It's partly an employment program for a number of different individuals, and some with disabilities. Page 9 at the bottom is the administrative account for deed. Page 10, starting on line 4, we mentioned the constitutional amendment, the sales tax. It's going to be part of the Clean Water Legacy Program. We're showing these appropriations here. They were also in the governor's recommendation. Page 11 is language for Explore Minnesota Tourism, where we're just kind of repeating the base language. Carries on to page 12. And page 12, line 10, we mentioned the increase there for the film board, the jobs production program. Page 12 on line 27 and 28, we're restoring the base for the Housing Finance Agency. Mr. Chairman, the rest of the language is all the same for housing finance, except on page 13, line 13 through 17, we mentioned the high-risk adults appropriation. Mr. Chairman, on page 15, the labor and industry appropriations, again, they're on the spreadsheet that way. Page 16, line 16.7 through 15, that was the increase in the apprenticeship program. It's basically trying to reach more people in the non-construction trade programs. Remediation services, that's a repeat language. Page 17, down to line 10 for the Historical Society, you can see the appropriations there. They're a little bit better spelled out on the spreadsheet. Line 23 through 31 is adding back appropriation that the governor vetoed for fiscal year 9. Page 18, the Board of Arts, you can see the numbers there that were from the spreadsheet, and then on line 20 is the public broadcasting numbers. We're increasing equipment grants, and line 21 is the grant for the public, the digital broadcast conversion. Page 19 is the Commerce Department. These are just the basic appropriations. It's similar for for the Accountancy Board, architects, barbers, combative sports. Transfers we mentioned that we think are available because of the federal stimulus to offset the need by the Workforce Development Fund and dislocated worker needs. Mr. Chairman, that's Article 1 of the bill.
Okay. Do you want me to proceed? Well,
who's got Article 2?
Well, Mr. Chair, Articles 2 through 5 are actually the contents of the deed technical bill from Senator Bonoff's bill, 1198. And there are only some slight changes that deed has actually agreed to put in their technical bill. And if Mr. Nelson or someone else from deed is here, if we need any explanation. Otherwise, they're very technical in nature, and deed asked for those changes to be put in. If we need further clarification, this has been heard by this committee already, though.
And the reason we have it in this bill is because it does have financial implications, and so we want to make sure that even though it's some policy changes, also that the policy changes do have financial implications, and so that's why we have it in here.
Okay. Continue.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, continuing on with Article 6. Article 6, page 83. Page 83 of the bill, Article 6. Is the Iron Range Resources article.
And members, I don't know how technical you want to get on that, but that is specifically to the agency on the Iron Range, the IRRRB, and we have some projects that are all based on some money that was paid back to the agency by Kobe Steel, and they've been put into projects that will be shovel ready and create jobs and are basically into the agency itself. So none of the money is general fund money, and much of what you see is clarifying what majority of the vote means, and we want to make sure we know that at least 7 members are voting, and then there's some repayment of some funds and some transfer of some funds. So it's specifically to the agency itself, and I've had a discussion with the governor's office on some of it already. So I'm sure I'll be hearing back from them on some other areas of it, but unless you want me to get into in depth on the IRRRB, I think that's probably good enough right there. So,
okay, Mr. Chair and members, continuing to Article 7, which begins on page 107. The first 6 sections are actually from the Department of Commerce
agency bill, and so if we need an explanation on those, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, members, that's to implement the budget changes that we've already talked about for the Commerce Department.
Okay. And continuing on, Mr. Chair and members, in Section 7 on page 105, this provision is actually regarding a petroleum tank cleanup program, and the amendments are would allow substances, tar-like substances, to be included in costs that are allowed to be recovered for the cleanup program. Section 8 on page 106, this provision relates to receiving federal stimulus money by the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. This was requested by the fiscal analyst, and it's regarding Chapter 3, and that's regarding to receiving federal stimulus or federal money. Section 9 also regards receipt of federal money, and this is actually for the PFA to receive the money and spend it appropriately. Section 10 is from Senate File 1932. That is Senator Senjum's bill on program accountability requirements. Section 11 is from Senate File. Is that 1810? Senate File 810, and that is your bill, Mr. Chair. And that is for the public broadcasting. And that continues on through Section 12, Section 13, Section 13, 14, 15, and 15. And Section 16 is Senator Pogamiller's Senate File 1541. This establishes a university neighborhood development, sort of a program with near the University of Minnesota campus. And that was heard in division. And the amendments have been made that were made in the division. Section 17 is also regarding receipt of federal funds, and this was requested by our fiscal staff. Section 18 is from Senate File 1661. This is Senator Bach's registration of unlicensed individuals bill. That also continues on to Section 19. And through Section 19. Section 20 is your bill, Mr. Chair, regarding the it's Senate File 1269, the Minnesota Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund. This was heard in Senator Kielash's subcommittee and then sent back to this division. That Section 21 also relates to the Minnesota Manufactured Home Relocation Trust Fund. Section 22 of the bill relates to the repayment of the St. Paul River Center. It allows partial forgiveness of the River Center loan debt to the state.
Not until when? Mr. Jensen, do you know this?
Mr.
Chairman, the loan forgiveness would start in the state fiscal year 2014.
So it doesn't have any effect on
Mr. Chairman, it would not have any effect on the next biennium or the biennium after that, which is 12 and 13. So the loan forgiveness would start by 14, which means they'll be making payments for four more years on this loan.
Okay. And Mr. Chair, the next section, section 23 on page 118, this also, or this is a provision from Senator Cohen's bill 1115, and this allows the St. Paul to issue up to $40 million of general obligation bonds for the pond project that we heard here in committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair?
Well, we have an effective date and a repealer that is just some technical workers' comp provision.
And do we need to?
What is it? Mr. Chair, we do need to make a technical amendment to Section 24 of Article 7. The effective date, the section applies to the bill before it was put into the omnibus, so it needs to reference different sections.
Mr. Chair, we can make the technical correction. Some of the references may be...
it's okay with the committee. We'll instruct the council to make technical corrections to the bill after we pass it out. Is that all right?
That's a motion, right?
I don't know. I think we can make that as a motion, yeah. Yeah. And we'll make that as a motion when we get done with the bill. Okay. There's one little correction. In Section 18 on page 111, that's a change that is made to accommodate some electrical work that's been performed in Minnesota by people who missed the deadline to apply for their unlicensed individuals a certificate. And so this allows them to get credit for some training that they got during that period after January of 2008. So that's just an explanation of I didn't tell council about that, so she didn't know. Okay, and then is there anything else? Okay, so as far as the staff as explanation of the bill, I think that's it. Do committee members have any questions of the staff or of any of the Senator Parcel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment that I would like to offer, and I have a packet of them here for passing out. I don't know who.
I'm sorry.
It's changing some language in the bill. Which occurs on page 2, so it's easy to get to that page.
This is something different, I think.
And at this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Chair, for Ms. Tanae Wells to come to the table to answer any questions that you may have of her on this.
Okay. You want
it. It's about the Women Venture money.
Okay, what do you want? What do you want to do here?
On your sheet, you'll find that on page 2, we're going to delete lines 18 through 21 and insert paragraph C from the page that's before you on the amendment here. Lines 42.9 to 42.25.
Okay, Ms. Wells.
And I think that
first of all, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Peruzzo, for this opportunity. Women Venture, as you know, is an economic development organization that helps people start and grow their own business.
Would you repeat your name for the record, please?
I'm sorry. My name is Tanae Wells. I'm the president of Women Venture, and Women Venture is an economic development organization that's been in existence for 31 years. We've helped over 5,000 businesses start. And our request is start and grow over 5,000 businesses. We serve the entire middle part of the state of Minnesota, so we are not just an urban program. And we see over 6,000 individuals a year, including some men. What we're asking for is we're asking the Senate to match the House file number by increasing the amount of our contribution to $225,000 and to allow us to do not only business development with those funds, but also to train women for non-traditional employment jobs. The reason for this request is that we can absorb the 42% decrease in our funding because we've been able to get some stimulus funding from some other sources of funding from the Community Development Financial Institution. And so, of course, Women Venture wants to do its fair share in contributing
to the state's financial situation. But at the same time, we're hoping that we can match the House file amount of our funding by $225,000, and also to look at helping more women get higher paying jobs through getting jobs in non-traditional employment areas. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair and members, that's repeated in the language between lines 9 and 25 of page 42, well, of the amendment, which says 42 at the bottom.
Senator Perso, the only problem is that it kind of busts the budget here. And the number we put in was the number that was in your bill, and it's the number that's in the governor's bill. And if the House has this in their bill, then we can figure it out in conference, I would imagine. But if we put it into this bill, it's going to cause problems with our bottom line. But I don't – I mean, if you want the language in, that's fine. But the 225 causes a little bit of a problem with our budget. So, Senator Sparks.
Mr. Chair, and to that point, and not that I'm opposed to what Senator Parison is trying to do, but I think that you've put together a good bill here, and if we start doing this, I mean, there's a lot of other programs that have taken some serious cuts, too. I'm just afraid if we start down this road, and as to what you said as well, this bill is still going to budget balance at the end of the day. That may be something we want to save for a conference committee.
And so, Senator Parris, if you want the language on your amendment with the 175, does that work for you for now?
I would like to have a vote on the amendment as it's presented.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to be able to support 225. So if you want to take a vote on that and the amendment dies, we're going to end up going with the language that's in the bill and the number that's in the bill. And so I'm just asking you how you want to handle that.
Well, we could go through the procedure, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Then Senator Parris moves the H-860-DE-1 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion is not adopted.
Chairman,
Senator Metzen.
I have the A9 amendment. This is, I think, hopefully kind of technical and cleans up. Has to do with the Minnesota Science and Technology Economic Development Project. We've heard many of these kind of public-private project science initiatives in our the Economic Development Committee, and I know a number of the members on this committee heard this stuff, but this amendment will create an opportunity to move forward a mechanism to connect and coordinate economic development. This is where we can get all the players together and high technology research people, product and process innovation people, science technology, and you can read them on here. And it just we worked on this actually all afternoon, and I think it just and it provides for a project group with Indeed that will come back to the legislature as early as next session with recommendations to help us guide the economic development in this area. We really have no roadmap that I'm aware of, and this would just create that. The players or the people that are involved in this stuff want to see this new language in here. So,
are there any comments from anybody? Anybody in the audience need to comment on the A9 amendment?
Only if they like it. No, just kidding. I think it's fine.
Okay, so Senator Metzen moves the A9 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion adopted. Are there any other amendments? Maybe Senator Kelash, how about if we move the Torres-Ray bill into the bill, as long as we've got it in front of us, I don't forget to do it. That's the A8 amendment as amended. So Senator Kelash will move the A8 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Olson.
I didn't know what it was about. I'm going to vote no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment for line page 102. This is an oral amendment for Article 7, and it's been requested by the Minnesota Realtors. And perhaps we could have Christine Bergen come to the table in case.
What's the amendment, Senator Olson?
Well, essentially what the amendment is something the realtors have worked out with Commerce about What the amendment would be is that we would add the language after line 102.35 to state a natural person licensed under Chapter K or Chapter 82 shall not be charged costs of an investigation that result in no finding of a violation. And I understand from talking to Mr. Manning, who's here from Commerce, that that was their intent to begin with, but that this is more clarifying language, and so there wouldn't be any fiscal implication from their perspective.
Is Senator Olson's understanding correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christine Berger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. I'm not sure. I'll let the department speak to that.
Mr. Chair, Manny Munson-Regala, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce. That is correct. Our intent was not to assess costs to individuals who were found to if a complaint was lodged against an individual and we concluded there was no basis for a complaint, we were not planning on assessing the cost of the investigation to them.
Okay, so this language is okay with everybody then? That's what I'm understanding. Do you have the language?
Mr. Chair, no, I don't have the language, but I can talk with Senator Olson, and get
just,
it.
Senator Olson, just repeat the language one more time, just
Mr.
so we
Chair,
have it on the record, so everybody understands.
After line 102.35, add the language, a natural person licensed under Chapter 60K or Chapter 82 shall not be charged costs of an investigation that result in no finding of a violation.
Okay. On that motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion,
Chairman?
Comments, or amendments on the bill? Senator Vanderveer?
Mr. Chair, we're working on one for it doesn't add to the Hugo tornado, but allows them to reimburse some costs to the school.
Okay.
Which should just be briefly.
Okay. Senator Pariseau?
Mr. Chairman, I would lift this off the table and delete the figure on the monetary figure on line 42.9 and try and add the language into the bill. Would like to move that.
So
this is DE1.
So Senator Pariseau, you want to insert 175,000 where you have 225,000 in your amendment?
If that's what you have in the bill, that'll work.
Or do you want to have You want your language.
The language, but I'll take this figure out of the amendment, and we'll use the other figure.
Okay, does everybody understand that then? So what's the motion? Do we have to move to reconsider the, what was the number?
No, she can just offer it.
She can offer it.
Offer it as a new amendment.
Let's do this.
We'll make a DE.
Move to
reconsider. DE one and a half or something like that.
Move to reconsider your.
Someone on the prevailing side would have to do that.
Senator Pariseau moves to reconsider.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Pariseau moves to reconsider the DE1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion is adopted. Now Senator Pariseau moves to delete on line 42.9 225,000 and insert 125,000. Or 175,000.
Yes. Mr. Chair, that's what we'll.
Okay, so all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion's adopted. Do I have to now vote as amended?
Okay,
let's vote one more time just to make sure on the D11 as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion's adopted. Okay.
I can do this, Mr.
Senator Vanderveer.
I think I can do this orally if it's okay.
All right, we'll try.
Just to insert, actually, do you have where the location is?
I'm trying to make you nervous. Mr. Chair, Senator Vanderveer, I believe it would be on page 4, line 17, a new sentence following expended.
Following. Page 4, line 17. You insert, you know what he wants to do?
I don't recall the language exactly.
You got an idea what you want to do?
Yes, I've got it written down.
Okay, right. Let's read it then.
Okay, the city of Hugo may reimburse Onika Elementary up to $7,800 for costs attributable to the Hugo tornado May 25th, 2008.
We need all those words.
Would you, Mr. Senator Vanderveer?
Then you've got it.
Mr. Chair, yes, I believe these words are all necessary.
Okay. All right. Did everybody understand what he was doing?
Yep.
He's just using 7,800 from the 350,000 to give to the school in case they need it for janitorial services.
We're giving Hugo permission to take part of this money that we're giving them to reimburse the elementary school for. They were used as kind of a headquarters during the emergency and had costs attributed to that. So we're allowing the city to do that if they want.
Okay, so Senator Vandermeer moves that oral amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think I found what might have been an error. At least it's a discrepancy between the spreadsheet and and the bill. It's on page 8, line 10 through 22. And this is the appropriation for Minneapolis Summer Youth and Learn to Earn. If you add those two together on the spreadsheet, it comes to $1.2 million.
We've been complaining about the fact that we do a spreadsheet, and then you can't just use a computer to transfer the numbers into the bill. They have to actually physically transfer them. So Senator Dibble's correct. So on page 8, line 10, both numbers that say 1.1 million should be 1.2 million, or so it should say 1,200,000 the first year and 1,200,000 on line 10. So Senator Dibble moves to make that correction. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion adopted.
And Mr. Chair, can I drop the 325 on 8.16 to 300,000? Kind of an agreement made within Minneapolis to kind of share the pain across those two programs kind of proportionally.
Yeah, I don't have any trouble going down in numbers.
So then all right. Can we give that money to Pat?
No. Well, the overall, it's just within the rider language, so it all stays inside.
Oh, okay, I see. So the $1.2 million doesn't change, just the $325,000.
Right.
Okay. So on line 8.16, Senator Dibble moves to delete $325,000, insert $300,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Any further discussion? Senator Colt. Wait. Okay, you're not done yet, Senator?
Oh,
Senator Colt, go ahead.
No, I just have a question. So
I have an amendment, Mr. Okay. Chair. The A7 amendment. It's being passed out. This is the same as Senator Clark's, or no, I'm sorry, Representative Clark's, and I think you had the counterpart. Mr. Chair, this is part of the People's Bailout Bill, and this has to do with the some of the foreclosure issues and some of the renters' rights in rental properties that have been foreclosed. And so, Mr. Chair and members, what this provides for is when a rental property is foreclosed, folks who are renting. They need to let them know that they can continue to pay their utility payments, keep their utilities on. It allows the mortgage holder, if they take over the property, to allow the tenants to stay in the property, and it provides for those terms and also the eviction terms. It declares a moratorium on foreclosures for a year.
Yeah.
Which I suspect will be of interest to the committee. And those are some of the terms around this foreclosure moratorium. And so, Mr. Chair, we have folks in the audience who are able to testify if you're open to taking testimony.
We can take some testimony. Even though this is my bill, our only real problem with it is that it's all policy, and trying to keep as much policy out of here as possible. But I don't know. Do you want someone to testify? Just the
sure.
Senator Dibble, who do you want to testify?
Hear why this is an important issue.
Who wants to come up?
This is bad.
Hi, my name's Lyndon Galboy. I'm with the Minnesota Coalition for a People's Bailout.
I appreciate our opportunity to bring this up as an amendment today. We did have a little trouble getting this through the normal committee process, mainly because we're really new at these committees. We appreciate this opportunity. This is an important bill because everyone knows we are in a housing crisis, and we also know that there are some great attempts at some good programs out there to help homeowners who are struggling and to help tenants. But those programs are not in effect yet. You know, they're either dreams or they're tied up in some bureaucracy, or quite frankly, you know, the banks are going through a tough time and they're kind of moving slow on how they want to deal with the mortgage foreclosures. So all this moratorium does is buy time for people to settle with their bank somehow. It's going to allow people to stay in their home and still have to pay something, still have to keep it up. And that's the ticket, keeping up the property so that our communities are not blighted with these empty homes that are gutted and a mess, quite frankly. And it keeps the properties alive, it keeps communities alive, and actually, frankly, it's going to keep banks alive as these homes do not fall into absolute disrepair. And then as far as the rights for the tenants, all this does is allow people to keep their leases for a certain period of time. You know, that provision will expire, but it allows people to keep their leases if they've been paying their rent, assuming that rent was going to be going to paying the mortgage. The tenant should not be punished. It's not a get-out-of-jail-free card. There are ways to, you know, people have to pay something. People have to take care of the property, and the mortgage holders are free to negotiate at any time on any of these provisions.
Welcome to the committee. Please say your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Rosemary Williams, and I am the face of foreclosure. My home is going through foreclosure right now. In my black, there are already four empty homes. I'm in South Minneapolis. This would give me time to pull things together to remain in my property. I've lived on that block for 55 years in South Minneapolis. There are other residents that have been there equal amount of time that are going through this serious situation. To allow me to remain in my home, to give me time to pull things together, as she said, would keep our communities together. Because, like I mentioned, I already have four homes on my block. And I advise you to ride down through North Minneapolis on Fremont, which is a safe street. You will see 11, 12, 13, 14 homes vacant. 75% of all the homes in Hennepin County are in North Minneapolis. It is a totally blighted community. So I ask that you consider what we put before you here, and I thank you for having this opportunity to speak to you.
Senator Koch. Oh, Senator Metzen.
I just so much so late here. You got four or five pages of policy that have not been heard anywhere. It's not a money situation. And I think it extends. Does it extend the foreclosure period from a year to 2 years? Is that part of this?
No, 1 year.
It extends it 1 year.
Well, it allows people to, yeah, it puts a 1 year moratorium on foreclosures.
I personally think it goes in reverse of what you're trying to do. I think if you have a property sitting there for another year and the birds are flying through the windows, the copper's stolen, and the building inspectors, the ones I've talked to, aren't excited about this. And we all sympathize with your, you know, but I don't know, it just seems like a lot going on here, Mr. Chairman, late in the game. And so I just don't think I can support it.
But that's what we're trying to prevent. My home would be another one that would have birds going through it if I were not in it.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I agree totally with Senator Metzen, but I wanted to inquire of Senator Dibble. Was this introduced in bill form, or I walked in as you were presenting it? So what's the procedural status?
This was a bill introduced by Senator Tomasoni, and I believe it.
But Mr. Chairman, Mr. Cohen, that's all it was introduced. It was not heard. So you can't say you disagree with me until you hear all the facts. You can, but it's the dope first before you say.
I said I might, I think.
Oh,
I
did you say you might? Okay.
Well, Senator Metzen, it was in front of your committee and it was presented, but it was laid on the table, if you remember correctly. So I'm not sure we had a good discussion on this provision or not.
You're not sure.
And Mr. Chair, to one of Senator Metzen's points, one of the conditions stay the foreclosure is that an individual has to remain living in the property. So it's not about prohibiting foreclosures if the property is abandoned. So I mean, people have to be in their home. So it's not about birds flying through windows. It's quite the opposite. I understand this is, and I respect your view that this is a policy matter coming into a finance bill, but it is a couple of ideas dealing with folks in rental circumstances, and I think increasingly folks are aware that renters are often the unwitting victims of this foreclosure crisis, these rental properties, and actually I think they are actually victims in disproportionate numbers to even homeowners. These rental properties are foreclosed and people are out on their ear because the standard practice in the lending community is, you know, clear the property immediately of all the renters. And that's a really, really bad consequence. And then, you know, just, you know, with respect to homeowners, and it sets forth a number of conditions. People have to continue paying. They continue, have to keep the property in relatively good order. Just a year that it's asking for, and hopefully they can get their feet back under them. Hopefully the economy can come back, and hopefully it will also result in our neighborhoods being more stable.
Senator Vandiver. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. This is certainly another day in the neighborhood here. A lot of people are going to lose their job when we're done today. We have a situation where the people we are trying to help, we are going to hurt because you throw a moratorium on foreclosures, and then the way we fix the contract for deeds in the state so that they're harder to, much less secure for holders of them, but to come in and change a contract after the fact will certainly destabilize the financial markets in the state, will reduce the availability of home mortgages, will increase the costs of those mortgages, and at a time when we are in an economic crisis and we're watching government slop around making it worse and worse every day. So today we are going to effectively end any kind of security that's attached to home mortgages in the state. Why we would do that, I don't want to question motives, but pandering might come to mind. But, you know, I wouldn't want to say that directly. But looking at oh, I'm sorry.
We'll take it as an indirect comment, okay?
I just think this is wrong. I mean, it's clearly wrong, and I think anyone who, you know, thinks about it more than a couple seconds knows that it is going to, if it were to pass, which it isn't, it's going to make the whole bill, more than likely get it vetoed, because common sense would say that we don't need more disruptions, we don't need more uncertainty. It's just a very, very bad idea.
Senator Kulesh.
Well, unlike Senator Vandiver, I don't think the committee has made up its mind on this, and I have reservations about it, mostly because I believe it needed to go through the Judiciary Committee because there's a lot of legal language involved in it. And other bills that I've sponsored, I've gotten some fair corrections out of that committee, and it has to do with property rights, et cetera. And while this may be a great bill, it probably should have been heard early in the session and had a chance to air those concerns. So,
Senator
Mr. Mark? Chair, and I think kind of going along with what Senator Kulesh said, this has got a lot of policy. I'm vice chair of the Commerce Committee. I think we have done a lot of good things in the area of foreclosure. In fact, Senator Scheid's going to have a bill in front of this committee on lender mitigation. But to bring this bill here at this time, I'm certainly not going to support it.
Deb.
Hi, my name is Deb Konichny. I'm also with the Coalition for a People's Bailout. And I would just like to remind the senators on this committee that a bill similar to this did pass the entire Senate and the House last year that put a one-year moratorium on foreclosures, and that passed the entire two bodies last year. So in some effect, this bill has been heard before, except for the rental pieces. I would also like to remind the senators that in the 1930s, there was a moratorium placed on foreclosures of farms and homeowners' properties. And that went to this, was appealed to the state Supreme Court. It was upheld in the state Supreme Court. It was upheld in the U.S. Supreme Court. So there's obviously a precedent in this state for the legislature doing the right thing. This housing crisis is a crisis now. I don't know if you're not feeling it inside these walls, but outside these walls, we are in desperate situations, and we are also in a crisis similar to the 1930s. And we cannot wait another year to deal with the housing crisis. And the bill that is coming through is a good bill, the mediation bill, but there is no bill in play that is doing what this bill does, what this amendment would do, and that would give the relief that families in Minnesota of all economic backgrounds, actually, of all class standing, are feeling right now. This is a bill for all of Minnesota, this amendment, and it needs to have a voice. We need to have a voice for the housing crisis in this legislature.
Mr. Chair, to that point,
Senator Vandeveer.
These mortgages are bundled and they're bought and they're in pension funds and things like that. Who's going to reimburse the widow or the person who was going to get the mortgage payment or the money, you know, when the property sold? Who's going to take care of those people when the fund is worthless?
People still have to pay something under this legislation, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. And that money will go to the mortgage holder, whatever you call them.
Something.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to weigh in with maybe what would be more of a freshman perspective on this, but this, I understand what Senator Kielash said, and I sit on both Commerce and Judiciary committees, and you know, these certainly are this is certainly squarely within that jurisdiction, and we have a process where we like to see things through those committees and you know, hopefully maybe give some improvement or some ideas to bills. But on the other hand, you know, from a freshman perspective, the process we have in place in the legislature doesn't necessarily always allow bills to go forward and be heard through committees and maybe the will of the majority to occur. Sometimes a particular committee or a particular group of legislators might feel one way and another group might feel another way. I think our ultimate responsibility, though, is to our constituents and to try to do the right thing for what the overall will of the legislature would be and what we think to be in the best interest of our constituents. So I regret that this wasn't heard in those two committees. I'm not quite sure what the history is and why that didn't happen. But ultimately, if I have to look at procedure versus what I think is best for constituents, I think I have to err on the side of what I think to be best for constituents.
Senator Parasol.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to mention that there were several issues, several bills that were aired thoroughly in Judiciary Committee on foreclosure issues, more than one. And, of course, we had some good membership there, and Senator Scheid and several others who were able to sort out a lot of the stuff and make some of them come through quite wholly. But maybe everything isn't perfect, but there were several other issues referred there, or other bills referred there on this issue.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
I you know, this is going to dry up mortgage money. If you put this additional burden on the lenders, there's not going to be any money to do mortgages. So just keep that in mind.
Senator Coker.
Mr. Chair, and I would just add to that, I come from, my county is one of the highest, if not the highest, foreclosure rate in the state. So I am thinking of my constituents, and if it's going to dry up mortgage money, we want these houses off the market. We want these houses moving. We want people, new homeowners, to get mortgages just so that we can get these houses off the market. And so I have to be mindful of anything that I support, that if it's going to dry up money, it's a no for me because we need to move those houses.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, I I understand and I respect members' view that the process hasn't been perfect. I concede that. We're bringing a policy bill into a finance bill. We're bringing something that maybe didn't have a chance to get to judiciary. Nevertheless, it's an issue of sufficient urgency that I felt it was important to bring this, this idea in front of this committee and maybe give it some life. I think the earlier testimony that points out that, this passed and was vetoed last year by the governor. So, we're taking another stab at it. And we've done this before in the state. I would also just take this opportunity to object to the idea that I'm pandering, or the suggestion that I'm pandering. I'm not doing so. I object to the questioning of motives. I think Senator Vandeveer will remember that I once got into that neighborhood with him and acknowledged my error and apologized to him for having suggested that he had a motive for offering an amendment, and I think that's just very bad form for the Senate. So just formally object to that statement. I have a foreclosed house next door to mine, and it's been in foreclosure for a year. So there are no new folks coming in with this magic mortgage money that will dry up. Mortgage money has dried up. We're talking about keeping people's lives and their neighborhoods more stable for just a small window of time, for a year, keeping people in those homes, maybe giving them a chance to get their feet in under themselves. We've got another foreclosed property down the street from me and a neighborhood adjacent to mine, 3, 4, 5 houses on a block. So we're just trying to give some light and give some air to what might be a really good solution to this problem. And dealing with renters' issues, too, who are disproportionately victims through no fault of their own of this foreclosure crisis.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Dibble, you are correct. I apologize. I shouldn't have said that.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I just also want to bring to this committee's attention, because we have been hearing bills along this line, something else that they may find relevant. In the Commerce Committee, the banking industry brought as an amendment, it wasn't introduced as a bill, and it was added to, I think, Senator Dibble's bill, Senator Sparks' bill, I think it was your bill, Senator Sparks, a provision that changes state law that allows them to hold on to properties instead of 5 years, which is current law, expands it to 10 years. So rather than turning property around more quickly because it may be undervalued today, we gave them, with no notice really to the public, an opportunity to hang on to their property for an extra 5 years, which, in my opinion, is kind of counter to what we're doing with these bills. So, but in any event, Mr. Chair, I just thought, I'd make the committee aware of that if the principle is notice and so forth.
Senator Olson, lots of strange things happen in committee. It's relative. What's relative here is what happens to the bill after it gets out of this committee. And Senator Cohen, I know this is supposed to go to your committee next, but does the judiciary then have the ability to get it out of your committee and request it if they want to see it before it goes to the floor? Mm-hmm.
Well, Mr. Chairman, certainly, although historically finance bills have supposed to go from the full finance committee to the floor, with the exception of those that have tax provisions, a couple of times I've seen finance bills be pulled into a policy committee if there's something that the policy committee wants to take a look at. I obviously can't speak for what the policy committee in this instance would do, but it's not an impossibility.
Senator Dibble, did you have a comment?
No.
Okay.
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
Roll call. requested.
You want a roll call?
Thomasoni.
I withdraw the roll call.
Okay, roll call is withdrawn. All those in favor, are there any other comments? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Senator Parasol.
Mr. Chairman, I have another amendment. It is A-10.
A-10.
And I would like to ask that Mr. Chelseth come to the witness table, please. Be here for answers, questions, if there are any.
Thank you. Senator Paris, would you want to explain the amendment, or you want Mr. Chelseth?
I think Mr. Chelseth has a lot to offer, so I think we'll start with him.
Senator, Mr. Chelseth, please say your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Adam Chelseth, and I'm here on behalf of the Alliance of Automotive Service Providers, which is a trade association of more than 100 auto body repair shops in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'll be very brief with my comments. This amendment would address a financial disparity involving the sale and safe disposal of lead-acid batteries. The $5 surcharge in sections 325E.115 and 1151 was intended to act as an incentive to safely dispose of these batteries. Battery manufacturers imposed a $5 surcharge on retailers, who then imposed a $5 charge upon consumers when they purchased a new battery. If consumers were to return an old used battery after they had purchased the new one, they would be refunded their $5, and manufacturers would then refund the retailers. This, I'd like to emphasize, this is solely a pass-through transaction. The idea is that no one is making a profit at any level or at any stage of this deal. The problem today springs from the fact that manufacturers have increased their charge from retailers to $10 and sometimes more. However, as you can see, the statute still limits the surcharge amount from retailers to consumers at $5, which results in a net loss for retailers. This amendment is simply designed to restore some of the parity that was originally created. And with that, I would stand for questions from the committee.
Are there any questions or comments from the committee? It looks to me like all it does is change the $5 to $10.
That's pretty much it, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And so you would pay a $10 surcharge on the battery when you buy it, and you bring it back, you get the $10 back?
That is the idea.
Is there anybody in the audience who is opposed to this? Anybody in the committee who'd like to comment on this or question this? Okay, seeing no comments, Senator Paris so moves the A10 amendment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion adopted. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. I had just an oral amendment I wanted to end visiting with committee counsel. It's suggested that I put it in after line 5.2. I would like to, it concerns Senate File 2014, which we did here in the committee, that dealt with Lutheran Social Services capacity building for their debt counseling. They're currently turning away a couple thousand people a month, so I think it would behoove us to put a little something in there. It's not nearly as much as they ask for, but I think $225,000 would give them enough to go about a fourth of the distance they feel they need to go. And that would be my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Your amendment would be to do what exactly?
It allows Lutheran Social Services of Minnesota to hire, I believe it would be four more debt counselors to help people avoid bankruptcy who would probably otherwise do so, with that $225,000.
Okay. The only problem is now this takes us above our bottom line by $225,000. Mr. Jensen, how does this work? We had the same issue with Senator Paris's amendment here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're 14,000 above the target now, so this would add another 225,000. I understand it would be a grant to the Lutheran Social Services for counseling on bankruptcies, mortgage delinquencies?
Well, it's Mr. Chair and Mr. Jensen, it's primarily to avoid bankruptcy that they get them. You know, the debt counseling does allow people to restructure their debt. It just helps people that can't see a way out of it to find a way out if they have a little help.
Senator Kubley, I would love to be able to do this for you, but I'm not sure where to get the money from right now. And I don't think it would be responsible to send the bill out of here with more, a bigger number on the bottom line than what we already have. And we're a little bit over right now. Why don't I suggest you withdraw your amendment and see what we can figure out in the very near future and see if there's some fund somewhere where we can get some money from to possibly fund this, possibly in the Finance Committee or maybe in the Conference Committee. Do you know if it's in the House bill?
I do not, Mr. Chair. I don't know, no.
Well, I promise to work with you on this. I just don't know that I should put it in the bill right now because of the number that's on the bottom line. This puts it way above where we're supposed to be at.
All right.
Okay. Senator,
I'll withdraw
the amendment then. Thank you. Senator Dibble, did you have your hand up? Are there any other comments or questions or amendments? You have a question? Senator Koch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is to, on the spreadsheet, it's line 370. It has to do with the Workforce Development Fund. I see a transfer there. I assume it's from the general fund. First, I want to confirm it's from the general fund to the Workforce Development Fund or from the Workforce Development Fund to the general fund. I assume it's from the workforce to the general.
Mr. Chairman, members, line 370 is a transfer from the Workforce Development Fund to the general fund.
Correct. And Mr. Chair and Mr. Jensen, I have a little concern. Is that coming from some federal stimulus dollars, or where is that? Okay, that's from federal stimulus. And then I guess I'm just wondering if
technically it's coming from the Workforce Development Fund, but the Workforce Development Fund where we're taking it from will be replaced by federal stimulus.
So. Is there someone from DEED that would be available just quick to talk about that or
I'd like to have somebody ask, but that's fine. Does anybody from DEED want to make a comment on this?
Or no? Somebody.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rick Caligiuri. I'm the Director of Job Seeker Services at DEED. I oversee a number of programs, including the Dislocated Worker Program. And my concern would be that this will impact the state's ability to serve dislocated workers. Even with the stimulus funds, I am fully expecting that we will run out of dislocated worker funding in the next fiscal year and not be able to enroll any new dislocated workers. The rate that we're burning the funds right now because of the recession and the number of people we're seeing is just incredible. And there no longer is any carryover in the Workforce Development Fund. And we are projecting unemployment rates in 2010 to go up well over 9%. So we'll see increased activity. And right now, I believe with the Workforce Development Fund, we probably have only about a little less than 2 million unobligated to serve mass layoffs, and those are happening with increased frequency. And even with the stimulus funding, again, we are projecting that somewhere between halfway through the year to three-quarters of the way through the year, we will be out of all funds, federal, state, stimulus, all funding will be gone. And we won't be able to enroll any new dislocated workers.
Mr. Chairman, Rick, would you comment on the national emergency grants that are available and the Trade Assistance Act grants that are available?
There will be some help in that regard. We are going to aggressively apply for national emergency grants. We've been trying to apply for one for automotive-related industries. Through the Denny Hecker layoffs, and you know when that happened. Well, we're still trying to get that. These national emergency grants are really difficult to get, and they're not a sure thing. We will aggressively go after those. There are probably about three of them that we're planning where we package large layoffs together by industry and go after that those funds. But again, with what's going on in the country, across the country, there's a great demand on those funds at the Department of Labor for those emergency funds as well. So it's not a sure thing.
And Mr. Caligiuri, just so you know, with there's $20 million, we believe, at least in workforce
Correct.
Development funds coming from the federal stimulus package. We didn't take even close to all of it because we knew about this, and so we didn't want to leave the funds short. And I believe there's another $20 million of more they're dedicated funds, right, mm-hmm. that are coming from the federal government. And so we thought that this amount here would not leave us in such a crisis that it will not be doable. The commissioner does have the ability to raise the rate also to, is it 1.12 on whether or not he'll do that, I don't know. But I think we were at least responsible in not using not even a quarter of the total funds that are available from the Fed. So that's kind of what's in the bill here.
Mr. Chair and board members, if I could just offer one more thing. There is language in the Federal Recovery Act that talks about states not being able to supplant. In other words, you can't take money that was otherwise intended for that purpose and supplant it with stimulus funds. So I just want to make the committee aware of that as well. But we do project we're going to run out of all dislocated worker funds in the next fiscal year.
Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, the increase in the fee would raise about $4 to $5 million in fiscal year 10 because we only get it for half the year. And then in fiscal year 11, it would be roughly $9 to $10 million more in revenue.
Senator Cook.
Well, just Mr. Chair, I just would add to that. You know, I am concerned about these funds, whether it's UI or the Work Dislocated Workers Fund, and triggering automatic increases on businesses is probably not something we should be cognizant of that in this time too. So, just good to have the information. I appreciate you're okay. trying to be conservative with that fund.
Okay,
so.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Caligiuri. Ms. Polito.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. Brad Leto, Chief of Staff for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. And we'd be happy to work, as this moves along, work with you on this. We would be, and this is the first time I've seen this, be a little concerned with the money coming in, because the need is going to be large. And I know we've looked at some of the stimulus funds, too, as far as not being able to use that to backfill. The other, on some of the money, this federal stimulus money coming through, is the workforce service areas. That money will go through to them. The independent grantees, such as the Teamster Service Bureau, Quality Career Services, some of the others are dependent on the state funds. They won't be able to. They can be eligible for some of the other grants that Mr. Jensen talked about. But as far as federal money, that's going to go to the workforce service areas, is my understanding. But as I said, as this is in flux, I'd be happy to work on it. I know that there's as you mentioned, the ability for the fee to go up, and we're certainly, we would probably, I think we would disagree on with some of the other folks on that. We're fine with that going up, and in fact, if the legislature, would like to increase that otherwise straight out, I would certainly think that the need, at least for a year or two, I think that need is going to be there. It does take, there is a lag period of time from when that would take effect, actually the money would come in to the fund. So whenever you would put the effective date on an increase, so that's something to think about too. But I'd be happy to work with the committee on this, but we just are concerned because the need is, it's not getting better, I guess.
Right. And we understand, Mr. Little. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Just very briefly, my name is Ann Olson. I'm with the Workforce Council Association, and we represent the providers in the workforce centers who see the people coming in on a daily basis looking for assistance from the Dislocated Worker Fund. I just wanted to reiterate what both Mr. Caligiuri and Mr. Leto said. We just think that now is a very difficult time to be taking any money away from those services that we're able to provide. Mr. Caligiuri is correct. We did a survey of our members, and they are projecting that at the local level, between the 16 workforce service areas, and again, this doesn't include the independent providers, we did a survey projecting the amount of stimulus dollars we think we're going to get, as well as the best projections that we could do with the Workforce Development Fund and our other national funds that we get through the Workforce Investment Act. And they were anticipating that we're going to be short between $12 and $20 million to serve just the numbers of people that we're seeing now. So I understand you're in a very, very difficult budget situation, but if you could just keep that in mind as you're moving forward, and I'd be happy to talk with you later, see if there's anything else that might be an alternative to transferring money out of those funds. I'd appreciate it.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, as you explained when we started working on this bill, the money doesn't go and disappear in the big general fund. It goes back into programs like small business acceleration, small business growth, some help for disabled people. So it's still used for job training in a sense, and we're not taking all the money, all the balance that we see right now.
And you know, and we're trying to create jobs through some of those programs and get people back to work. So does anybody feel the need to say something?
Move your bill.
All right, then. Is there any more comments or amendments from the committee?
Mr. Sunday.
Okay. I guess the way this works now, on your front of your bill, lines 1.1 and 1.2 will be deleted, and then I will be introducing SCS 1198A-3 on behalf of the chair and on behalf of the committee, and so that will be the motion to introduce SCS 1198A3 on behalf of the Committee on Economic Development and Housing as amended, and we will also instruct the staff to make any technical corrections. Any comments or questions or further discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you very much. Cap, I don't know if Cap even knows this, but this will conclude the work of the committee as far as the economic development bill is concerned, I hope. And then what we have left is the legacy amendment, and so we'll be having to pass a bill out of here based on the cultural arts and whatever the name of that amendment is. So, Cap, go ahead.
Wait, Mr. Chair and members, we also, because of the way that deadlines are structured, third deadline applies to omnibus bills. So bills that are in our committee are still alive to travel on their own. There are a few bills that we have scheduled for Monday that we are planning to try to process and let them move on their own if the committee desires, but then we will start beginning work on the legacy amendment funds that we have jurisdiction over.
So also, since this will be actually introduced on the floor tomorrow, anybody wants to have their name on the bill, like I got room for four authors, so just let me know, okay? All right. Okay.
Oh, there were a lot of volunteers. Look at all of them.
All right. Four of my friends. Okay. Thank you all very much, and meeting adjourned.